Hiya, Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Director Justin Kurzel has crafted a filmography built on exploring the impact of trauma and violence on a nation. Whether it be his excoriating debut film, Snowtown, or the acts of cautionary storytelling with Nitram and The Order, Kurzel's work questions how violence and trauma lingers in our bodies, our minds, and in our lands. It's a notion that he explores with impressive strength with his first foray into documentary filmmaking, Ellis Park. This profoundly moving and soul-shaking film is a complex and layered cinematic experience that carries dual purposes. It's partly a companion piece to musician and all-round genius Warren Ellis' transcendent book, Nina Simone's Gum, in which the famed musician regales his experience with the titular item and then expands upon the gum's impact on those it meets, while also partly being a dive into the past and present state of Ellis as a musician. Kurzel takes Ellis back to his hometown of Ballarat, where we meet Ellis' parents, hearing some of his father's songs and experiencing humanising moments between father, mother and son. In these journeys, Kurzel takes Ellis to notable locations near his home. A statue of Pompeii becomes an audience for Ellis' singular violin work, while the Grand Crimson Auditorium of an empty cinema becomes a vessel for his tunes to be played to a crowd of ghosts. Before introducing us to the film's other layer, the titular park, a wildlife sanctuary in Sumatra, which Ellis co-founded alongside the empathetic Femke Den Haas and her fellow conservationists. Ellis notably hadn't visited the park, yet had dedicated time and financial support to get it off the ground and to continue operation. Kurzel's camera follows Ellis as he embarks on the journey to take a bronze cast of Nina Simone's Gum to the sanctuary and for Ellis to meet Femke and the other conservationists, while also getting to meet some of the animals cared for in the sanctuary. I was left in awe of Ellis Park, a film which, I'll fully admit, had me watching through my hands at times. The presentation of trauma on screen is something I've long considered, especially in relation to the way it marks our psyche and leaves scars on our soul. To be frank, this is secondhand trauma, yet it's still painful to witness nonetheless. When Kurzel chooses to present footage of animals being rescued from the illegal trades, or to let the weight of stories about the physical trauma that robbed Rena the monkey of her limbs, or Aaron the elephant off the end of her trunk, he does so with the knowledge that presentation is education. And education is awareness, and awareness brings about change. With that in mind, there is a catharsis in Ellis Park. Partly because of Warren Ellis and his healing violin, there are moments where he plays music to the animals. It just haunts me in my sleep. But as the man says, his presence is minimal compared to the presence of Femke in The Conservationists. Yet when paired with Kurzel and editor, marked as co-writer here, Nick Fenton, they collectively bring light to a horrifying trade that scars the environment and, by virtue, the world. I'm shaken by Ellis Park because of its presentation of trauma, but equally so for its depiction of empathy, consideration, and support. While humanity does have a level of cruelty to it, it also has a level of understanding, compassion, and support. And that's what's explored here. This is, oddly, my first time talking with Justin Kurzel. Having listened to and read countless interviews by him, I was aware that I would be engaging with someone who was deeply empathetic soul. Yet, I was still left disarmed by his connection to his openness about his connection to work, his family, and to the art of cinema. This is a really great conversation, and one that I'm deeply grateful that I was able to have the time to be able to spend talking with him about. To support the film, Warren Ellis and Justin Kurzel will be running Q&A sessions around the nation. All the details are in the show notes and you can visit thecurb.com.au for more details, but make sure to pick up tickets in advance when the film kicks off with a virtual Q&A screening with Warren Ellis at Perth's Lunar Leaderville Cinemas on the 5th of June. The Q&A run concludes with a Sydney Film Festival and Vivid Sydney exclusive event on the 8th of June at the State Theatre. Ellis Park then releases wide across Australia on the 12th of June 2025. Once more, all the details of screenings are in the show notes, or alternatively, visit Madman, their website, for more details. The Ellis Park Sanctuary is part of the Jakarta Animal Aid Network. It's a non-government, non-profit organisation that was established in 2004 to protect Indonesian wildlife, with a focus on animal cruelty and rescuing animals from the noxious illegal animal trade network. To support the organisation, visit ellispark.org. Additionally, if you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, at thecurbau. Usually I would give a bit of a plug about us being independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. And yes, that is important, but for this particular month, I want to stress that while we still have a Patreon going, patreon.com/thecurbau, I would really love it if you joined up from as little as $1 a month, and we've got all bunches of different levels. It's also a level where you can listen to an unedited interview with Justin Kurzel, where I include the parts where we're talking about Australian football, not exactly pertinent to this post, but nonetheless. But for the month of June 2025, I want to say that every dollar that we earn from Patreon will be sent as a donation to Ellis Park Sanctuary. So even if you want to support the sanctuary or you want to support The Curb, you can do it via patreon.com/thecurbau. As little as $1 a month. When the monthly ticking over of the funds comes in at the beginning of July, I will collate all of that and send it off to ellispark.org. So please either go directly support the park or support us. And for the month of June, you'll be able to support the park too. So please do so. Finally, we'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Once again, I'm so grateful to Justin Kurzel and Madman and Sydney Film Festival for organising this conversation. I greatly appreciated the time of being able to chat with Justin about his work, and I look forward to exploring it again in the future. Here's the trailer for Ellis Park, followed by my interview with the man himself, Justin Kurzel.
You all right?
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay, Mum.
Got the right tune?
I never found the right tune.
Playing music was always an act of meditation for me. The world stops. I could never roll that into real life. As a kid, I would come in here and sit. There was this statue of light from Pompeii. The story of the exploding volcano. The woman's hand over the baby's face, trying to protect, doing whatever you could.
The main exit from Sumatra to Java, this is huge smuggling route for animals.
The poachers catch them for the illegal pet trade when they are babies. It's so sad. These are critically endangered animals, but there was no center here. Then Warren stepped in, and the impossible became possible.
I really can't wait to meet them.
Have you been in a cage with primates before?
No, I haven't. You hold my hand.
Welcome to your Indonesian home, Warren.
There you go, gorgeous. Here was a team of people who were so devoted to what they were doing. It absolutely blew me away.
The park is not a zoo. The goal of the place is to give them their freedom back. Here I see care, and I see faith, and I see hope, and I see compassion. I see all these values that has taken me a long time to try and come to terms with in my life.
What's that, an eagle?
Yeah. An eagle.
Yeah.
I put that through a stem of a champagne glass.
That's pretty
was,
wild too.
Yeah, well, it's not like an eagle.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been a delight to be able to see your work kind of evolve over the years from something very brutal with Snowtown and then obviously ending up here. So I guess I'd love to start talking about violence, which is a strange thing to kick off an interview talking about, but you often explore the impact of violence and the resolution and how it impacts people and impacts culture. And that's something that's quite profound about Ellis Park is the way that you present the resolution and the impact of trauma on animals and the people who care for them. Cinema itself can be a healing process too, and I'm curious if you can talk about using cinema as a healing process and to explore the impact of violence.
Yeah, look, I think when Warren sort of first showed me the images from the sanctuary, and you know, and what inspired me most was that there were incredibly traumatized animals that had horrific things done to them, and sort of what that sense of rehabilitation is, and in a weird way, sort of a forgiveness that I don't know, I started to sort of feel a lot within. Within visiting the park and seeing these sort of animals and sort of trying to sort of comprehend what had been done to them and you know and what that process was for them in regards to healing, so that became sort of front and center a little bit. And then obviously going through, you know, I found it really interesting with when we sort of started to in a really spontaneous way shoot Warren. That, you know, we started in Ballarat and really you sort of, I started to sort of understand and appreciate the challenges that he's had in his life and how that's affected his creativity and him as a person. And it also opened up stuff for me and I guess my relationship with violence. And so it was this sort of exploration in a way of, a whole lot of things, the repercussions of violence that became really interesting. It wasn't going to start out like that. It was really about the kind of strangeness of that I found in kind of Warren sort of, you know, buying this land to start this sort of, you know, extend on this sort of wildlife sanctuary and the journey of him sort of traveling there for the first time. But it is sort of amazing about documentaries that the story actually starts to appear and you start to kind of go, oh, wow, fate's kind of taking me here. And now it's becoming about this. And how much is that within us leading it towards it, or how much of that is sort of fate, you know, kind of, I don't know, holding a mirror up to us and sort of wanting us to investigate some of this stuff a bit more.
Yeah. With that in mind too, like your films often explore true stories and you'll bring a version of the truth to them that is adding narrative context to it. But again, this is your first documentary, which is its own form of truth. So how did making Ellis Park shift your perspective of truth on film?
Well, I never really completely believed that, you know, even within documentaries, that they're kind of real story, like true stories. Like I think that a director takes a point of view, and that's the point of view that they put forward. And even with real stories or documentaries, that you know, you've kind of got to make a stand as to kind of where you want the camera to be and how you want the story to sort of play. But you do. There is a responsibility to it. You do wrestle much more with, real people and real stories and how that's going to affect them and the sensitivity of that, and always trying to sort of understand why you're interested in something and what the bigger truth of it is, the bigger sort of story that you're sort of trying to tell, and how all the kind of parts of it can sort of lead to that. Yeah, but it was the first time I'd sort of done a documentary, of a feature-length documentary, and it was I found the sort of spontaneity of it and the way in which the sort of story evolves and how you have to be quite nimble with sort of understanding kind of where the lens should be. I was really taken by that.
Yeah. I'm curious then, like, so when, before you even did Snowtown, did you do any short documentaries or anything like that?
No, I never, I did music clips and short films. I admired them a lot. Like, I remember going in Adelaide when I was 16, 17, I went to the Adelaide Documentary Festival, and it was the first time I'd seen, like, Grey Gardens, like, the Maisel brothers were, like, the guests, and I'd seen Grey Gardens and a couple others, and I just loved them. Like, I sort of fell in love with documentaries. I found kind of watching real people just so interesting, and couldn't quite believe that you could kind of create stories, really, really emotive and powerful stories out of kind of, you know, real footage. And to this day, you know, if I'm going on a long trip on an aeroplane, it's usually the documentaries channel that I'll kind of watch all the way through. So I've always had a real love towards them, but yeah, I don't, for some reason I haven't ever, maybe I've been scared because I do, like, having just done one, it is a shitload of work.
Yeah.
It just seems to go on forever. And, you know, I was very, really fortunate in having Nick Fenton, the editor, really do a lot of heavy lifting with the film and be able to kind of, you know, kind of write a sort of script in a way. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Nick, because I spoke to him around when Nitram came out, and there felt like when he kind of came into your orbit and working creatively with him, there does feel like almost a documentary style of editing to those films there. But then I look back at like The Arbor, for example, which is this beautiful marrying of documentary and narrative storytelling. It's such a powerful film. And I feel that here as well. He's noted as a co-writer as well on this too. What's that creative process like?
It's very organic. It's quite wonderful. I can't quite explain. We're very different people, Nick and I, but we have got extremely close because you spend a lot of time either in a room or on an iPad together, kind of, you know, really talk. Like I've always, with Nick, there's a lot of discussion and talk, and that can not even be about the film. Like, it can just be about life. That kind of does sort of affect what it is. But I've always loved that about Nick, is that first and foremost is cinema for him. It doesn't matter what sort of medium or format it is. It's about kind of like, where's the point of view and what's the most interesting way of telling this story. And I just knew that, you know, with this documentary, that because there's sort of a point of view in it which is of the landscape and the animals and a kind of sense of fate and destiny within it, that, you know, needed a certain cinematic language and a place within it amongst this sort of found, observed, rolling kind of interview sort of style with Warren, that, you know, felt much more immediate and kind of happening in front of your eyes. So it was sort of the combination of those two styles that I was really fascinated by, and it was how Nick would rub them up against each other and you know, how that would work. But yeah, he's quite extraordinary, and his sort of film knowledge and his appreciation of film is very, very sophisticated and unlike most. He's a very deep thinker about film. So you know, I feel very fortunate in the way what he finds interesting, because that's always interesting. Like, what rushes does he pick? What bit of this does he pick? Like, what is he seeing in this material? I've always really loved.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, talking to him and just getting to, like, sit with his mind for a bit of time was quite a powerful thing, because especially coming from an outsider's perspective and then stepping into Australia and then getting to tell Australian stories and then craft them from that outsider's perspective. It skews how we see our world, and there's a beauty in that, right? Because how we see our world then changes how we interact with it and how we engage and how we think. And I guess that leads to the notion of advocacy as well with Ellis Park, which is this beautiful form of advocating for the animals. But this film itself then becomes an act of advocacy too, not just for the animals, but for stories as well. Can you talk about film as a form of advocacy and how important that is?
Yeah, I think that, the only way I can sort of look at it is sort of point of view is how, I mean, I didn't quite know how personal Warren was going to be in this film. I really did think it was going to be a kind of jolly old journey ride to kind of Sumatra, where Warren arrived for the first time, and, you know, it really kind of shocked me when we went to Ballarat how personal this was becoming for me as well, and I guess the experiences that he had as a child and how they kind of shaped him as an adult, that side of it was really surprising and really beautiful, you know, and you had to be really patient with it and trusting of it. And it was sort of, it was small. It wasn't like grand story beats. It was really nuanced. And so I think that the way that then rubbed up against the park and the sense of healing in that park and what that was, I was surprised by that. You know, I mean, looking back now, I don't know why, but I was surprised how personal the documentary came.
I mean his book as well plays a role in it, and the beautiful scene of his dad reading that section from the book too is quite powerful. Getting to see a moment like that take place, what were you feeling then?
Really moved. I was I've been a big fan of Warren's dad from the duet that he did with him, and Warren would always sort of talk about his dad in a way that I was, you know, I'm really intrigued by him. I just saw two parents that were incredibly proud of their son, and it was beautiful seeing Warren, you know, amongst these quite frail parents, and him concerned and, you know, a sense of sort of really strong care came out of him in those kind of moments. So, and they were funny. They were just, I mean, his mum and dad were provided an enormous amount of wit in the film. I saw it as a real privilege. I mean, you know, this sort of extraordinary artist, celebrated international kind of, you know, rock star in a way, to sort of be walking around Ballarat and visiting the fish and chip shop he went to, and, you know, and him showing me his old bedroom, and, you know, there's something unbelievably beautiful and moving about that.
Yeah, there is. But then there's also, coming back to the animals, there's something beautiful and moving about those stories as well. And while we get to see what Warren's reaction is, it's, you know, I imagine you would be equally moved about getting to hear their stories and seeing them. What's it like being on the ground and getting to visit that particular park and getting to hear the carers talk about their work and then meeting the animals too?
Well, the primates especially are extremely human. Like you really feel and can see in their eyes and their actions, and when they're scared, you know, and when they trust, and when they're happy, that really shocked me. Being that close and really being able to read emotion in that way from these, you know, there's one particular night where a young primate had been brought in, and the mother had been killed in front of it, like 24 hours before, and it was coming into the, and the way it held on to the carer and then wouldn't let go for the next 24 hours, you know, it was deeply powerful and moving to experience that grief from that baby. And you couldn't help but sort of, it felt like a very human experience. It did that sense of sort of distance that you may have with animals in terms of trying to read and understand kind of how they're feeling, you know, like you are with your dog, you're trying to kind of work out, is the dog happy, scared, whatever. And, you know, and after a while you can kind of see the sign that it was crystal clear with this primate. So, you know, that was, you know, and then just this incredible dedication by the park and by the people that work there, and Femke. They completely devote their lives to treating these animals with enormous care and respect, and are incredibly imaginative the way they build this sanctuary. And, you know, they're putting up something every day and they're trying to work out how do we get more support. And they're kind of unbelievable kind of warriors. And that you know, that, that there's an aspect in which they kind of live their lives, which makes you think about your own, the way you live your own life and what's important, and you know. So I was I was pretty moved by.
Yeah.
I just felt fortunate all the time. One of being around Warren, you know, this extraordinary artist and man that's really revealing and sharing so much, and being able to like be, you know, so close, like be able to hand his violin to him, for him to kind of play, you know, this amazing fucking violin that I've just adored and admired for so long, this incredible player and artist, and then to be that close to these animals that that have obviously gone through so much, to watch them fly into freedom, you know, and be there when that sort of happens and they realize that they're home. I mean, it was quite life-changing.
One of the things which is talked about is this notion of peace as well, and safety, I guess, is the best way of putting it too. What does peace and safety mean to you? Like, how has your perspective on peace and safety also been changed having spent time with Warren, having visited the park and made this film?
Oh, I think to me it kind of comes back to family. You know, I think peace and safety to me is family, and to be around people you love, and that's all I felt making this sort of documentary, is I was around incredibly beautiful and loving people that, you know, that amongst all the sort of hardship and challenges, that was sort of the consistent thing that was guiding everyone. But yeah, I think family was the biggest thing that I sort of came away with.
Yeah. There's this sense as well of like your films almost act as like an exorcism for social anxieties in some regards. Like Nitram is about gun control, and The Order is about Nazis in America. And then of course Ellis Park is about animals and the illegal animal trade. And it's this exercising off those social anxieties, which I get great value out of. But I'm curious for you then, like talking about family and talking about sense of peace, do you see that your films are a sense of, like, you know, getting these out of your system in some regard?
It's not so much that. It's really curious. Look, there is a curiosity about why certain things happen, mm-hmm. and sort of understanding behind the kind of monster or the myth or the kind of, you know, what the face of the story is. I think that there's... But, you know, look, it's really interesting talking about family, because I do think that a lot of what is common about my films, and that people maybe focus more on the violence, but for me, a lot of the focus with some of those films has been about family. You know, like Snowtown is about family, lack of family, the wrong family. It's about kind of belonging to something and that being kind of corrupted in a way. It's about abandonment of family. You know, Nitram is about, you know, to me, it was a lot of it was about the struggle to love in family, and what that, you know, and to how do you manage, you know, a horrific situation, the trials and tribulations of kind of being a mother, and what that is, you know. So, and The Order was sort of about family too. It was sort of a lack of family for Jude's character, of kind of, you know, a sense of isolation that character was going through amongst a man that was trying to build community and family, you know, platformed on hate. But all of these characters sort of desperately and searching for kind of connection, and a sense of a tribe or a community, you know, and that, I think that has been sort of underneath it all, something that, you know, when I'm on set and I'm doing a scene or in an edit looking at a scene, I do keep on coming back to those kind of aspects of life and what family kind of truly means and the importance of it.
There's something profoundly beautiful about that notion as well, especially in places that don't have family. As the last question, something which I tend to ask a lot of people, which is about being an Australian filmmaker and what it means to be able to tell Australian stories right now. And you've certainly built up a filmography that has defined what Australian cinema can be. So I'm curious for you, what does it mean to be an Australian filmmaker right now and creating and telling Australian stories on screen?
It's very important to me. It really is. I mean, I grew up on Australian films. I didn't grow up on American films. I was really lucky. On every Saturday night, ABC would play an Australian film, at around 8:30, and I would sort of hide behind the couch and sort of watch a Paul Cox film that I probably shouldn't have watched. And, you know, kind of these amazing filmmakers of Julian Armstrong, Bruce Barris, Peter Weir. You know, I remember seeing Bad Boy Bubby for the first time in a cinema, and, you know, at Trax Cinema in Adelaide, and just being kind of completely floored by that. Like, they've just spoken to me in such a powerful way. You know, I mean, Don's Party, there was something about that whole kind of period of recognizing and seeing my parents and their friends. And so it's always been a passion for me. I've always felt deeply connected to it. I do, when I come back after making a film overseas, to suddenly kind of hear Australian accents again. And, you know, there is an innate sort of understanding and connection I have with when the lens comes up and you're in Australia, you kind of you feel like, oh, wow, I'm home. Yeah. and I know this, and actually this is really rich and really interesting. So I think it's really important, and it's important because I love it. I love making Australian stories and working with Australian actors and amazing Australian crews, and, you know, so yeah, I've just started a production company called Thurborn that is, you know, a lot of it is about sort of trying to find new Australian voices and being there, like people were there with me at the start of my career, you know, really encouraging to make Australian work. So, yeah, it's, yeah, it means a lot.
Thanks again for listening to this conversation with Justin Kurzel about his documentary, Ellis Park, which is screening at the Sydney Film Festival. Once more, please consider supporting us on patreon.com/thecurbAU, where all of the earnings that we get for June 2025 will be sent as a donation to ellispark.org. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.